So hello and welcome back to another episode of the Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with me, Chris Hill. And of course, joining me are the Loose Heads trio of Rob Shotton, Mark Shotton and Dave Nicol. And Dave, I'm going to start with you because I believe since the last podcast, you've had some very exciting news and a congratulations is in order to yourself and your partner, Lex, who have introduced little baby Otis into the world at the start of the month. So Dave, congratulations. How is fatherhood treating you in these early stages?
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Yeah, I think Mark described it best when he said it's like being on a 12-month rugby tour. I'm certainly feeling the effects, both positive and negative. Sort of some absolutely mega highs, followed by crippling sleep deprivation, and then back to square one. But no, it's been brilliant so far. Thank you.
I don't know whether you take that as a compliment, Rob, that your dad said that about bringing up a child.
Yeah, I don't know.
make the 12 months 25 years, Chris.
I didn't want to say it. And I think the real question is then, Dave, will we be seeing a range of baby clothes from Loose Heads in the near future then?
Leave it with me. We'll see.
It's a cup pending TV.
That's how quickly he grows and how quickly I need new clothing for him.
Could be fast tracks. And obviously do check out the Loose Heads website for all the latest merchandise and products on there. It's looking really smart at the moment. And obviously Rob does a great job of pushing them out on social media as well as the podcasts, which we have been doing. And if you haven't listened to our last one with Charlie Beckett and Tom Hudson, and this is not me being biased in any way, shape or form, but please do listen to it. I mean, we did talk a lot of nonsense. We did have a lot of laughs, but they did, both of them, especially Tom, spoke really, really well about mental health and sort of the struggles they both had and sort of the struggles Tom had with his injury. So I do encourage you to give that one a listen if you have the time, because they were both really, really good value as well. And one of the topics they did discuss was women's rugby. And as we know, Charlie is massively passionate about the women's game with his sister, Sarah, being one of the current Red Roses. And Rob has gone through his contacts book and put one of the Red Rose superstars out for us this afternoon to join us on the podcast. So we're delighted to say England international and Gloucester Harbour scruff Natasha Hunt, also known as Mo, is joining us on the podcast today. Mo, thanks so much for giving us your time to chat to us today. How's things with you?
Yeah, really good. Really good. No, it's no trouble at all. I absolutely love your guys' work. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Great stuff. And Mo, I think you've probably been asked this a number of times when you do interviews to kick things off. And me and Rob had a little bit of a chat about it yesterday. Why Mo, and how did it start with you being called Mo rather than Natasha?
So it's been like lifelong name for me, Mo has, since I was young. Apparently my big sister couldn't say Natasha when I was born and it came out like Mo, and then that's just stuck. There's also another story that my dad held me and said, "Isn't she a little Mo?" Then they named me Natasha, but everyone continued to call me Mo. So it's just one of those things that I've just grown up with that my whole life, really. And unless I've been in trouble with my mum, that's the only time I'm really Natasha.
Up there with other famous Mo's in Mo Salah and Mo Farah.
Yeah, it's not a bad bunch to be part of, is it?
And I think, guys, I might be right, and I'm sorry, I might be wrong, and you can prove me wrong, but it's Mo the first scrum half we've had on the podcast since we started doing this.
I'm not going to count Carl Dixon, but he's a referee now.
Yeah. He doesn't count anymore.
Exactly.
Dark side, he doesn't count.
Different breed.
Yeah, so so Mo is definitely in our combined podcast 15, 100% there. So it's great to have Mo on the podcast today. And as we said there, as Rob said there, Mo is in good company with Mo Farah and Mo Salah, but her CV probably speaks for itself. Looking at it, World Cup winner, Grand Slam winner, Olympian, Commonwealth medalist, Mo. And with all our pods, though, we do kind of look to Wikipedia for a bit of research. Yours is probably the most interesting and the most out there that we've looked at so far. And I saw you did an interview around last year's Autumn Internationals talking about sort of the Wikipedia page. And he said, it was one of my friends edited it on a night out. It does seem that way.
No, it is that. So Millie Woods, one of the girls at Gloucester, we went out, I think it was her birthday, met one of her mates called Emily Andrews. And, you know, you just like get on with someone really well, like had a right laugh on the night out. And then she's texted Millie later that night, which is where I stayed, being like, "Oh my God, guess what I've done?" Like in fits of laughter, like sent her this voice message. And she basically had edited mine and Emily Scarrett, because she was out as well, our are Wikipedia pages, but obviously Emily Scarrett's a bit more famous than me, so whoever she's probably checking it herself and making it right, to be honest. But yeah, I just left mine because I absolutely love it, but she's put all sorts in there. And sometimes I think whenever we do interviews, people do look to Wikipedia to get a bit of background info, and I do get asked about it quite a lot. But depending on who I'm with, sometimes I go along with it, and sometimes I actually correct them and say, no, it's just a mate on a night out.
So for those who don't know, it does say that Mo's rugby inspiration came from a dream, as her best friend Emily was lifted in a line-out by Bruce Forsyth. I mean, if someone actually thinks that's true, Mo, fair play to them, but I automatically thought that is not true.
It's more the Mrs. Bobble, that's the one that people tend to go with, that people actually call me that, which is just completely not true, but quite amusing at the same time.
I'm quite keen to get the Loose Heads guys to maybe add something to your Wikipedia page after this, Mo, if we find anything out about you.
Just be nice, because one bit on it said that I performed under par in the 2017 World Cup.
I saw that, yeah.
That's savage. Like I said to Emily, I was like, did you do that? Because that's really hard. And she was like, no, mate, that wasn't me. Everyone's entitled to an opinion, though, I guess. Eh?
Yeah, I thought that is definitely not true. 100%
you can change that bit if you want.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll be kind and we'll change that bit, Mo. Just onto the rugby, Mo. And I mean, I interviewed you for Talking Rugby Union pretty much a year ago, nearly, around the Autumn Internationals, which seems so long ago because of what's happened. But obviously, you were back in action last weekend for Gloucester Hartbury. But how were you able to sort of keep busy over that? I think it was 7 month period before you, like, because I think your last game was in the Six Nations. So how were you able to keep busy during that 7 month period until the start of the Allianz Premier 15s?
Yeah, well, it was tough, to be honest with you. So obviously with the lockdown laws, it was just like whatever we were allowed to do. So we were lucky enough that one of my housemates actually works at a school, so managed to grab a bit of gym equipment. So we were one of the lucky ones that had a bar, like a few dumbbells and stuff in the back garden. But unfortunately, my back garden is stones. It's like pebbled rather than grass. So that was a bit of a nightmare trying to sort doing a bench press on that. But yeah, like I'm fortunate as well. I live with Tatiana Hurd and Sarah Bonner. So both rugby players as well. And we managed to actually keep each other motivated through the time. So we'd go and do our Gloucester Hartbury running sessions together or our weights together. And it was just nice to have company for the girls that were living on their own, or someone like Sarah Hunter who had was living in a flat. Like I don't know how they coped. Like it was such a tough time. But yeah, like the classic, we were on Zooms with the girls a lot. We didn't have too many because I think people found it was quite like intense, especially if we were trying to do a few a week and you obviously had your club, also country stuff. There wasn't too much going on in terms of that, but it's just making sure that you stay in contact with people. But I got to a point when I was maybe six months through that I just didn't want to look at my phone anymore. Like I'd just been done at like staring at a screen and trying to keep up with the world on that. So yeah, kind of approached it in very different ways as we went through the pandemic, I guess, but came out of it the other side, and it was so good to be back with the girls. Like I don't think anyone's ever been so excited to start a pre-season block. Like it kind of was 6 months in coming, and as soon as we were there and we were like back on the line, but running in groups of six or running with the different group that we were with, it was just amazing to be there. And I think it's almost like a humbling experience when it's taken away from you. You kind of don't realize how lucky you are and what a special group it is to be part of. So it was kind of nice to have that refresh, but at the same time, like I really wouldn't want to go back into it.
How much of a shock to the system has it been kind of getting back into training, or did you manage to sort of maintain the fitness levels quite well through lockdown?
No, I think for me, I managed to maintain it. So I like to run. So obviously like the 5K challenges and all that sort of stuff that was coming out. And we had like quite an extensive training program, both from England and Gloucester. So kind of picked which one I wanted to do at that time and just went with that. But for me, it was I wanted to train. Like it actually gave me a purpose and something to do, because I think especially being a full-time professional and not having my coaching, which is a bit that I do on the side, or anything else to go to, like that I struggled with. Whereas other girls had like obviously teachers, so they had their lessons that they were still focusing on, or different bits that they were able to still keep their mind engaged with. But yeah, I found that pretty tough, that almost my purpose had completely gone because I wasn't able to train with the girls. So in terms of my own training, I managed to stay on top of that pretty well.
Yeah. Was it nice to have kind of a bit more control over your training rather than it being dictated to you?
We didn't have any control. No, so I did. So my sister actually is a nurse. My little sister is a nurse. And one of the first things I did through lockdown was the NHS workout. I don't know if you guys saw it, but effectively, I can't even remember the makeup of it, but part of it was 144 burpees. So you did like rounds. It was like 10 rounds. I think it was like obviously 14 burpees in each round. And I tweaked my glute doing it. So I obviously then had to report to my club and country physio about doing that. And I got really told off. They were like, don't sway away from the program. This is why you're not allowed to do it. And I was like, yeah, but everyone in their right mind is doing different workouts on Instagram. And obviously having that tie with like my sister, my cousin being in the NHS, it was important to me to do it. But yeah, that was the first and last time I kind of strayed away from the program.
Because one of the things I saw as well, Mo, over sort of the lockdown period was obviously, you know, Rachel Burford incredibly well, and she was doing her sort of Burford Academy camps as well. So was it important? I know you said, you know, you had no control of whatever you did. But is it important for people to try new things during that time, just for mental health reasons, first and foremost?
Oh, 100%. Like that's what I went back to them and said, like, for me, like, that was really important to do. And it was also nice to do it with a different group of people. So one of our girls, Erica Mills, is in the army, and it was actually through her contacts and on like this random army Zoom that we ended up doing that workout. So it was one of those. I knew my glute had gone, but I couldn't stop because I was with all these army people. So just had to carry on. But yeah, it was just nice to connect with different people, and especially like trying different things. Like our training program is very similar. I'm sure like if you're in a professional environment, unless your S&C changes, they kind of have their way that they do things, and that doesn't necessarily change so much. So to be able to have time to go and work on your speed or your acceleration, or just do little bits that you don't necessarily get that time to do in season, it was quite refreshing, to be honest. And yeah, to anyone else like that hasn't tried different things, like hasn't tried workouts of the day or anything like that, like I would definitely advise, like, just go and give it a go, because you never know how much you're going to love it.
An army Zoom sounds very intense, Mo. I wouldn't like to know what that entails.
It was just their army group on like a Zoom call doing a workout, but obviously they're all absolutely like ridiculously fit, and I'd like to think that I'm quite fit, but they absolutely killed me. And then it was really awkward because as they were finishing, they'd be sat watching the screen. I don't know if you guys have done any workouts, but yeah, as they finish, they kind of sit and like wait for you to finish, and I was still going. Like, I'm actually embarrassed to still be going because the majority of people have stopped. But it was good fun.
Yeah, and of course, away from all the lockdown stuff, as you quite rightly said there, Mo, at the start, that you have been back to playing. It's been really good for the Allianz Premier 15s to be back up and running at the weekend. And I spoke to Rachel Burford last week, Mo, and she said the overriding feeling was we all just want to get back to playing, and we know the new law adaptations are there, and not everyone's been tested at the moment for COVID-19, but I guess every single player was just itching to get back playing last weekend.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think not only that, but you talked to, obviously, Hartbury have got the champ squad and they're gutted that they're not in the same position. Like, everyone's just wishing us all well, because rugby's not starting until January for so many other people. So we are in a really privileged position. And yeah, it was just one of those, again, like, you go out and you play and you're so hard on yourself because you want to be the best that you can be and you want to win every game. And that's why everyone plays, like, everyone's so competitive. But it was just a bit of a refreshing that, actually, like, let's go enjoy this because we worked so hard to be out on the pitch and we're finally here. So yeah, I think that was the overriding theme from the weekend, that just everyone was there and everyone enjoyed it, which was really, really important.
How good is it to see Allianz? I know you mentioned it, Chris, just then, the new title partner. How good is it to see Allianz partner up with the Premier 15s too, showing their support for women's rugby?
Oh, it's huge, isn't it? Like, obviously, we all know them as Saracens' main supporter. So they've been backing a side that are that good for that many years. And for them to even make the jump to the women's game, like, not only just to do our league, but even to show an interest, like, that is huge for so many other people and also other potential sponsors that might want to get involved. When you've got somebody that's that high up in rugby that want to back the women's game and they see that much value in it, like, hopefully that's just the start of a movement for people coming across and seeing what we're about. So yeah, it's fantastic, and full credit to them for getting behind us, and we just hope that that relationship can keep building.
Yeah, and obviously a good start as well for Gloucester Harbury at the weekend, Mo. A solid win over the new team, Exeter Chiefs. And I know you said previously as well, Mo, that you were quite gutted that the season got cancelled back in February, March time, because the final would have been at King's Home. You guys were in the top four. So a good way to start the season, though, on Saturday.
Yeah, massively. Like, we kept saying it all year that everyone kind of writes us off as Gloucester Harbury. I'm not sure why, but they do. But it was just one game to win. We get ourselves in the playoffs. It's one semi-final and then we're in a home final and who knows what could happen. So for us, like, that was the thing that we were chasing all season, and gutted that it got called short. But to get back out there with the girls, to play at home as well, was just huge. And obviously felt for Susie having to come back to her old club for her first game of the season. I thought that was pretty harsh, but it was great to just be out there to have a run around. And like I said, to do it with smiles on our faces was even more special.
I bet for you, it's nice to see Exeter and Sale sort of realise how important it is to introduce a women's team, but also it's two big teams to compete against, so it's a bit of a weird one.
Yeah, no, it's huge. And obviously, they've recruited really well, both of them. So obviously, the inclusion of Katie Daly-McLean going to Sale, like, that's massive for that club, because someone of her calibre, you're only going to bring in talent, you're only going to attract people to go there. And they had a really good showing against Loughborough at the weekend, and you see from, like, all of the social media, and obviously I follow the women's game very, very closely, but the structures and the importance that those clubs, like the men's clubs, if you like, are putting on having the women's section is massive. And that driving, like, you see, like, Harlequins and Saracens, and they're driving the way in terms of having all of the girls all over all of their marketing. When you go to the ground, you see pictures of the girls as well as the guys. Like, it's really important that people's faces are being put out there, and Exeter and Sale seem to be doing exactly the same. So it's great to see, and like I said, like, hopefully it's just going to keep building the momentum of women's rugby, and yeah, in a few years, who knows how big it's going to be.
Do you think we're finally starting to reach a bit of a tipping point with the women's game?
I hope so. I really do hope so. And I thought we were getting there just before lockdown, and obviously generating that momentum going in. So I was worried, to be honest. You saw a lot going on in the press about how much women's sport is going to be affected, obviously the impact that it's having on the men's sport. But I think what's been great to see is that, but obviously not for the guys that are involved in it, but the men's sport has almost had a bit of a cut in terms of, like, salary and bringing that down a level, whereas the women seem to have more of a backing, because we've kind of had no backing to start with. So there's been nothing that they need to compare it to. So any investment is good investment for us. And for that to happen, and I think for people to realise and see, like, how far that can go, especially with people like Allianz coming on board and showing their, almost putting their hand up and being like, right, this could be something, like, let's get behind it. I think it's only going to go one way. And yeah, I'm really excited to see where it goes in the future. I think it's going to be, like it has been for the last few years, one of the fastest growing women's sport in the country. And I think it's only getting bigger.
Yeah, I think we probably saw that, Mel, when we had a chat last year, when it was kind of around, I think you guys were playing at Exeter. I think France were over at Sandy Park, and it was a sellout crowd. And we know how much Exeter loves its rugby anyway, but it was just another big capacity crowd that the Red Roses had. So that must be such an pleasing thing for you. But I guess at the same time, you want fans back more than anybody else, because it just does show how popular the women's game is becoming.
Yeah, hugely. It's amazing to play in front of a sellout crowd. And yeah, we love it down in Exeter. Like, they really look after us. Everyone at the stadium is brilliant. It's a great place to go. Obviously, Southwest is always notoriously friendly, isn't it? So yeah, it's brilliant to be back down there. But for me as well, it's not necessarily that, but if we can't get crowds in, like, we need to be seen. Like, they need television to pick us up, to get behind our Premier 15s, to get behind our internationals, not just us, but when all of the Six Nations are replayed, like, they say it time and time again, but all our Six Nations are played at the same time. So if you want to get across all of them, you can't watch them. Whereas, like, that just doesn't happen in the men's game because the demand's there. And actually the demand is now there for the women's game, but because of how scheduling happens and all of that sort of stuff, it doesn't come across like that because the numbers are split between everything. So I think it's really important that even if people can't come in and watch, that they get behind it. Because I know that Sale put the live stream on for their game. Obviously, Gloucester Harbury had a live stream. We had 14,000 on both of them. And that was literally at that moment, at that time. So and how many people knew that that was on. Like, I don't know if you guys even knew that that was being played. Do you know what I mean? So as soon as like it gets out there and it's consistent and people know where they can go to watch it and stuff, I just think it's going to be huge.
I know you'll have to answer this very carefully. So I'll be careful how to word this, but do you think rugby maybe needs to get out of its own way a little bit, both across the men's and women's game? You know, sort of, you've got Premier Women's Rugby competition going on at the moment, and like you say, there's no TV coverage of it. There's talk of, you know, the men's Premiership final being on the BBC to reach a free-to-air audience, try and expand the game that way. Do you think kind of there's too much focus on making money right here and now and not enough looking at the bigger picture with this?
I think, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. Like, when our the financial officer came in the RFU and she said, like, we can't play any more games with the guys. Like, there's so much that's happening that they're playing at the minute. Obviously, there was loads of talk around it last season in terms of the season structure and all of that sort of stuff. And they can't physically play anymore because of how demanding this sport is. So the only way we make money now is by looking at the women's game. And it's true. Like, if you're a fan of rugby, then like you'll enjoy the rugby we play. Like, the ball's in play a lot more statistically than it is in the guys' game. It's almost like the guys' game 10 years ago, because we don't kick it as much. We don't go to the air to compete as much. So the tactical battle is quite different. It is a bit of a different strand. And yeah, like, we're not going to compete with a Premiership final. But what I would love to see is people get behind it after the Prem final's done. So that's this Saturday. After that, there's no rugby potentially for 5 weeks if they're taking that 5 week layoff, which is what normally happens. And we've got our game. So we've got 5 weeks of Prem games, obviously with the break for Six Nations on the 31st of October. But like, why not? Why not just chuck it on a BT Sport or chuck it on BBC or somewhere where people that tune into rugby and enjoy rugby constantly go to look for different stuff? Like, get it out there. Like, let's see, because it was awful, wasn't it, through lockdown when you went onto BT Sport or you went onto Sky and there was no rugby. And as soon as, obviously, across the other side of the pond, the guys were back playing, like, that was all anyone was talking about and watching, because it was just great to see live sport. And I feel like there's an appetite there for it, but it just needs to be out there, needs to be promoted so people know that it's happening. And then we'll see. I'm obviously going to be a big advocate for it though, aren't I?
You're right. It does feel like a huge missed opportunity. And I think even if the men's game was running, it still feels like there's a huge opportunity there. You know, kind of like you say, you only have to look at those live stream numbers you mentioned, or, you know, the people turning up to Sandy Park. Clearly there's an appetite for it. Just need somebody to sort of make that call now.
100%. It's the same as what happened with women's football. Like, someone has to take a leap somewhere along the line for it to see, it will sink or swim, but the chances are it's gonna swim, and people are gonna want to watch, because like, it is a good style of rugby, it is a good brand. We never really get any negative comments from those that come and watch us. Like, obviously you're always going to get people that can sit behind a keyboard and say what they want to say, but generally they're not people that have followed what we're doing. Those that come and watch and take the time out of their day to come and watch, we've only ever had positive comments and really positive feedback. So yeah, I'd encourage anyone to go and give it a go. And if you don't like it once, then fair enough, at least you tried. But just get out there and have a look at some of the games.
I also think, though, Dave, just following on from what you said, that 15 years ago, the women's game was almost considered something that should only ever happen on a Sunday, and please keep out of our bar on a Saturday and all that stuff. And I grew up, when I was early 20s, I met my wife playing rugby. I was part of a rugby club that was highly inclusive, and much the better for it. And I think what's probably happened in the last probably 7 or 8 years is those octogenarians who tend to run rugby clubs have been overrun by the modern world. And actually, that's where we can build on it. That's where we can absolutely build on it. Because a rugby club with a female team in it is a better rugby club, as I'm concerned.
Yeah, we're a different breed of human, rugby girls.
Definitely.
And you talk about the game obviously being exciting, Mo, and everyone on this podcast knows how exciting the women's game is. But I guess the new law variations as well make it a little bit more exciting. I know you said you are missing all the scrums I saw on Instagram that you did, that was one of the captions. But I guess that also just helps for people who may be new to women's rugby, if that ball in play time is increased. I don't know how it was at the weekend. I presume it probably was, that people will, you know, maybe learn rugby a little bit quicker and take up the game a little bit more.
Yeah, it was increased massively. I can't remember the stat that we had, but we had like 10 minutes or something of more ball in play time, because obviously you didn't have the stoppages. We weren't necessarily kicking for lineouts or anything like that as much. So yeah, it was really different. I didn't think that I would miss scrums. I really did. Like, I'm one of those people that as soon as the scrum goes down and they have to reset, I'm like, oh, come on. But it, for me, it was the tactical battle. Like, you don't understand how tactical that is until it happens. Like, the position of the scrum on the pitch, how, like, which side you're going to attack from, what strike runners you've got, what side, like, who you're going to try and pick on, what their defensive shape is doing, who's in their backfield. And then obviously you've got the actual tactical nous of the scrum itself. So yeah, I didn't quite realize like how important that was to the game until it was taken away. But other than that, it was great. Like, they didn't let us go quick on the free kick tap, sorry. So it was kind of like their defense was set, ours was set, and then it was just a chance to take a breather, reset and go again. But no, we played a good brand of rugby. Like, it was allowed to flow. Ball was in play a long time. Like, the wind was horrendous at Hartbury, so we couldn't really kick out of our own 22 very well when we were playing into it. But other than that, it was a decent game and we were really happy with how we came out of it.
Hi guys, I'm Sam James. I'm a Looseheads ambassador and you're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Make your mental health a priority.
I was going to come on to it a little bit later, Mo, but as we're sort of on the topic of the growth of the women's game, I know, again, going back to the chat I had with Rachel Burford last week, we talked about the Girls Rugby Club, which she's launched on the back of the Burford Academy. And one of the things we talked about was kind of role models of the game. And she mentioned that, you know, if you mention the name Natasha Hunt or Katie Dame McLean or Emily Scarrett to some of these girls who she was teaching, they unfortunately don't know who they are. So I guess what we need by what Dave was talking about before, getting the women's game out there, get it on BBC or BT Sport, is for young girls to actually notice the role models in the game, because there's so many in the sport.
Oh yeah, 100%. And there's a brilliant campaign going out in Ireland at the minute. Like, if you can't see it, you can't be it. I don't know if you guys have come across that, but it's just about getting female sports people out there, out in Ireland, so that the young girls, aspiring girls that want to play sport and want to do it, can see these people, because it's so similar over here. Like, you don't really know like who the top people are across the different sports. Like, and I'm not by any means saying that I'm one of the top people in rugby, but it is like that. Like, you don't really get the publicity that the guys do. Like, yeah, even looking across like different Instagram pages, I know some of our girls are really hot on it at the minute, obviously the Enough campaign that has been going across. But I know Poppy Cleo the other day put on her story about ProDirect. They haven't got any females in any of their football boots or rugby boot shoots. And then Rona Lloyd, one of the Scottish girls, she did a search for women's rugby boots, and there was one pair against men's rugby boots, and it was like 1,300 pairs or something like that. And it's just crazy, because then you create these gender stereotypes, and it's just unnecessary. You don't need to. Like, we're all playing the same sport, we're doing the same thing, like, and there doesn't need to be that tag on it. Like, a rugby boot is a rugby boot, and I wear the same as anyone else, do you know what I mean? So yeah, it is a hard time. But it's a battle that we're now talking about. Like, people are interested in, people are talking about it, and that's the main thing that's come out of it. It's just, we're actually having these conversations, so hopefully it's sparking a change.
Yeah, because I guess as well, Mo, obviously we saw the Perception Agency stuff, and obviously they've teamed up with Looseheads to sort of promote that hashtag Enough campaign. It's important it keeps traction now, because obviously it burst onto the scene on social media with what Flo Williams was doing, and now it's sort of important to carry on that traction, because we do see in the past that some initiatives can be great for 2 months and fall by the wayside, but hopefully this generates enough momentum to keep going.
Yeah, hugely. And what Flo Williams did was absolutely amazing. Like, I know Flo from back in the day, like playing with her at Lichfield, but she's a brilliant girl, and her ideas and what she's trying to do is so positive. And like, it's always the same, isn't it? When you start talking about things like this, you don't want to come across like you're hard done by, and it's not about that at all. It's just about making sure that people are aware of what's happening, like the stereotypes that we face, like doing what we love, the same as what anyone else does. And anyone that's got daughters, sisters, mums, like everyone's got a mum, do you know what I mean? So that those people, they could be affected by this as well. And I think it's when you put it onto your own self and how that might affect you if you've got a daughter and they want to aspire to be a professional rugby player and what they might have to face, that's when you always check yourself, like, oh right, well that could affect them, so maybe I need to think about what I'm saying or how we go. But it is massive, and we are getting more and more media, we are getting more and more publicity, people are more interested, people are standing up and taking notes, so it's definitely moving in the right direction. But like you say, we just need to make sure that momentum continues and that everyone just stays on board with it, because it is really important, and hopefully having this time to reflect that everyone's had, like, it's important, so that should carry on.
And also, to save your blushes, Mo, we'll say it for you, but you are a superstar of this game and you are that role model that the girls look up to. I hear that in my rugby club. It's an honour for us to have you on and sort of see that your humility close up. You know, that defines you. It's lovely to see.
I am actually blushing. Thank you.
So I just want to pick up on that as well, Mo, that we spoke to Abby Burton, who's obviously a Looseheads ambassador. And she said all the stuff with the Enough campaign is brilliant because, you know, you are breaking down those stereotypes. But she said when she was younger and these stereotypes were thrown her way, it affected her mental health massively. And you talked there really well about sort of people behind the keyboard just typing in a message and pressing send. And I don't think many people realise how much effect that has on people. So it's not just sort of, oh, let's keep promoting the women's game. It's about also helping people if they are struggling with mental health because of these issues that are being caused.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, just talking about it gives people a platform, because you know what rugby's like there's a lot of banter thrown around, and you kind of, with the banter, you kind of pick on someone's like worst thing that they might be really like really conscious about themselves, and that's awful. But the more you talk to people, the more you get to know people, the more you open up these conversation lines, like, the better it's going to be. And like, it just gives us a platform to be like, oh, that happened to me, like, this is awful, like, has this guy messaged you? And generally it's the same people. So across the women's game, it's like the same person that's actually an egg on Twitter that hasn't got a profile. And it's just, you need to go back to that, because they're an egg for a reason. They've got zero followers, or they follow five people for a reason. And that's kind of how they get their kicks. And actually, like, for me, especially like from a teaching background, I feel sorry for people like that, because they're obviously, that's a cry for help for me. Like, they probably don't have many people in their life. They just want some kind of human contact. They don't know how to go about it. So then they're just sat behind a keyboard having a go at someone, and a reply might mean the world to them, because actually somebody's communicated with them. So It's the other side of that as well. Like, actually, it's not okay to sit there and to say horrible things about somebody that you have no idea what's going through. But also from the other side of it, like, what's gone on to that person for them to feel like, one, they have the right to do it, but also that they want to say those things? Like, just be nice, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not hard. Just be a good human.
G'day guys, it's Brad Shields here. I'm a Looseheads ambassador. You're listening to a Looseheads podcast. Mental health is just as important as physical health.
And just to go on back to what Mark said there, you are a superstar, Mo, whether you like it or not. And I think you are the third World Cup winner we've had on the podcast. Again, I'm stand corrective or not, alongside Amber Reid and Dane Coles. And if you don't mind just talking about sort of that England experience, Mo, and 2014 seems like a really good year for a platform for women's rugby as well, in terms of the success you had. But what was it like being part of that World Cup experience, Mo? Because we spoke to Amber about it, and she was, you know, really, really sort of harping back to sort of the what the dressing room was like and what the celebrations were like on the pitch.
Oh, do you know what? That was the worst bit about it for me, because I actually got drugs tested straight after the final. So like, my drug testing history is horrendous. We could be successful at anything. So Commonwealth bronze medal, drugs tested. So missed out on the changing room, like, chat and stuff. And we won like one of the first European sevens tournaments that we won. We were watching the boys won as well. So everyone went wild, got pinged. By the way, all of these are clear, so it's not like I'm taking I'm very small, if you don't know what I look like, so it's not like I'm targeted for any reason. But yeah, World Cup final, so final whistle went, and our manager came over, and she was like, I'm so sorry. Oh, the other one, we won Six Nations Grand Slam, when the girls were allowed to parade it around the Twickenham halftime game. yeah, I was being drugs tested, so I had to stay at Isha Rugby Club instead. It's a nightmare, honestly. So anyway, Jamman comes over and is like, I am so sorry, Mel. I was just like, you have to be joking. So yeah, I missed out on all of those, but the after party was great, like with the girls, it was brilliant. And the build up to it was just crazy. Like we kind of shut ourselves away. So we had our hotel room, we had like the place where we ate, the meeting room next to it. And then it kind of opened out onto like a little pool area where we used to sit, which was, it was just so fun. Like the girls were such a good group of people. Like the whole build up was fantastic. We had a group of 30 of us that trained super hard, trained really well. Unfortunately only 26 of us could go, so that was a real tough moment when we had to drop four from that squad because they were a huge part of that whole thing. But yeah, just the whole build-up was brilliant. Like we kind of kept ourselves to ourselves, didn't really know much of what was going on at home, and then every now and again our media manager would just post up little snippets of what was being said in the press at home. And then we got through to the final, and the wall that she was posting it on was just covered. Like, and for us, it was quite new, like there wasn't really a lot of following. So to have that much support and all these messages, like any message that was tweeted as support or anything like that would get printed out and stuck up, and just going around and like reading that was just amazing. Like it was so nice to see how many people actually cared enough to send something in or to be part of it. And they really were part of it. So like that really kind of like snowballed for us. And it was just, we just had so much belief going into it. And I think there were quite a few of our squad actually that had either played in the 2006 World Cup or the 2010 and narrowly missed out to New Zealand. And I think the home World Cup in 2010 and the girls missing out on that like really stung. So it was going to be a few of their last World Cups. And it was just so important to all of us that we did as well as we could for them. And yeah, it just kind of felt like everything was going our way, like we were in the game. It never felt like we didn't have control, never felt like we weren't going to win it. And then yeah, when we were waiting for our medals, I just remember my roommate at the time, Kay Wilson, and we were stood next to Emily Scarrett, and she was like, why did you make this so hard for yourself before May? Like that was all right, wouldn't it? Like just basically jiving her. And it was just brilliant. Like it was so much fun. Really enjoyed it. And yeah, just an amazing experience with a great group of people.
And I know, Mo, you wouldn't, if you had dreamt about winning the World Cup, you wouldn't have included the bit about getting a drugs test after during the celebrations. But was that something you always wanted to do when you were a young girl growing up to represent England? I know you said in the past that you wanted to represent England and you weren't sure which sport, but when you did sort of get into rugby, was that always a dream of yours?
Yeah, 100%. So I've always been so sporty. I've always been really passionate and obviously always wanted to represent at the highest level. And like for me, it's always just about being the best version that I can be. Like I want to be the best that I can be and just always striving for that. But I remember standing in my grandma's kitchen and just saying like, I want to play for England one day. I'm not sure what. And then got selected for under 20s back in, must have been 2007. I think it was 2007. And that first bag of stash that you get, it was just like unbelievable. Like getting home, I've got two sisters and my mum's also like similar size to me. So they were literally like rubbing their hands together, like what bits of stash can we get hold of? But yeah, like when I got my first cap in 2011 was super special. I did it with some of the girls that I played in under 20s with. So I think Izzy Noel-Smith, Kay Wilson, Packer was cap before, like Sarah McKenna, players like that we'd come up through the ranks together. So to get my first cap alongside them was really special as well. And it was just, yeah, amazing opportunity, amazing experience. And I must enjoy it because I'm still here now. So,
and I believe as well, Mo, within the England camps, your grandparents, especially your nan, are a bit of a legends within the England camps in terms of the knitting and stuff for your teammates. And I know your granddad was a massive inspiration to you. You've spoken about that in the past, but that support from your family must be so key as well.
Yeah, it is. So grandma used to knit us hats with our names on. So she's a keen knitter, like it helps her arthritis. So she just knits people hats, like jumpers, cardies, anything now. But she used to knit us like red, white and blue hats with our names on. So that was kind of like in the under 20s, we all had one. So she made a couple first and then literally all the girls were like, can I have one? So like it just like kind of escalated from there. But she absolutely loved it and made her part of the squad. And yeah, it was really important. But family, everything to me. Like I love the fact that they come and support. Like it was one of the reasons for moving back to Gloucester, to have like make it easily accessible for my granddad, mum and dad to come and watch every game. And yeah, it's amazing to have their support, and it's amazing to have them backing me no matter where we are. I know that they're right behind me, so they do mean the world.
And we spoke last year as well, Mo, about you coming back to 15s. You mentioned it there, that you moved back to Gloucester. But was sort of, and I know we'll come on to the sevens in a minute, but was sort of 2014 and maybe the disappointment of 2017 one of the reasons behind you moving back, because you wanted the experience getting to a World Cup on those big occasions again?
Oh, massively. It was the sole reason, to be honest, because I mentioned it earlier, like in terms of me, like I want to be the best that I can be. And like, I'm a massive team player, huge believer in playing for the team. And it's not about individual performances and stuff, but I want to be the best I can be. And going into 2017, I didn't feel fresh. I didn't feel like I was playing my best game. Like I had a bit of a horrible season leading into that World Cup with stress reactions and different injuries putting me out. And yeah, like I wanted to be better than I was. I didn't feel like I was as sparky as I wanted to be playing in that final. And that was a big reason for coming back. Like I wanted to give it my best shot. I wanted to try and win a World Cup again. And obviously getting a bit older now, like with the Olympics, you never know. We hadn't qualified at the time, so it wasn't a case of trying to stay in an Olympic program to get to Olympics. We still had the whole qualification. And to be honest with you, it was one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make, because I love both sports. I love all the girls involved in both sides of it. And it was really difficult to make that decision. It actually made me quite ill. Like I didn't realize how stressed I was about it. I couldn't get out. I was like in bed, like with awful headaches. And then as soon as I had to tell people and made my decision, I was just kind of okay. And I was like, I really didn't think that stress would affect me like that. Like it was honestly not very nice. But being back in, I'm really glad that I made the decision. Like I've moved back home, got a house now, like settled around my family a lot more. And it was the best decision I've made, for sure.
Talk about the sevens circuit there, and obviously you've been successful there. What are your thoughts on the current issues around the RFU funding the sevens program? We obviously work quite closely with Sydney Gregson and Abby Burton as their Looseheads ambassadors, but what were your initial thoughts?
I just gutted for them. Like, it's just awful, isn't it? Like, you don't wish that on anyone. Obviously their livelihood and stuff, like they got away with it in terms of they were out of contract, so didn't have to, like it didn't go to much press or anything like that. But I it's really, really hard. And equally, like I feel for them, but I also feel for all of the other girls in terms of, like, it's a GB program that will be going to the Olympics. And you look at Wales, we've got a lot of Welsh girls here, obviously the Scottish girls that are potentially going to make up that squad, but they're now in exactly the same position as what the England girls are. So the England girls were super privileged beforehand to be in a full-time program, and it's amazing. It's such a great place to be. And now it's almost like the playing field was like leveled, and it's savage. Like I really just hope that something happens, something picks it up, and either it's a GB program and then everyone gets the best of it, or like England come back into it. But for the girls to not have any real warning that that was happening, obviously coronavirus is the reason that that's happened. It's not an excuse, but that's the reason that it's happened, because of the massive loss of what's happened at the RFU. It's just so tough. Like I feel for all of them. I know them all very well. Like they're all great girls. They're both the guys and the girls in that program are fantastic people, and it's just horrible. Like you just don't wish it on any of them.
Does Abby mentioned when we spoke to her, Mel, that it is kind of like a family when you're part of the sevens? It's, you know, you've got the England sevens family. I know you were with GB as well, which has probably added to that. So I guess that side is as important as, you know, taking on the world stage and playing those seven games. It is missing that camaraderie between the sevens family, if you like.
Yeah, definitely. But to be fair to the girls, like all of them are now settled into clubs. I think if anything, the girls are in a better position than the guys are, because the girls have managed to be picked up by all the Prem clubs. Like if they want to play rugby, they're in at the Prem clubs. Like they all seem to be enjoying it. I know like some of the girls have been coming into England camp, so they're coming in, they're training alongside us, they're getting a bit of money for doing that, which is brilliant to see. Whereas the guys, like I think there's only a couple, like Ben Harris has gone to Saracens, someone's gone to Bath, I think. But other than that, like it's just really tough. Like they've got families, like a lot of the guys have got kids that they're, like obviously the kids are dependent on them, stuff like that. So it's just awful. Like the whole thing's, it's really tough. And like my heart goes out to all of them, to be honest.
Yeah, and we hope for a bright future for those Sevens guys. You mentioned there, Bo, that a lot of them are with Prem 15's club at the moment, and it is with looking ahead as well to the internationals, which are coming up very shortly as well. So what's your schedule like now then, Mo, in terms of building up towards that those Six Nations games that you've got?
So we've got Italy on the 31st of October. That's our final game. We are in camps at the minute on a Tuesday and Wednesday. And then we come back to clubs on the Thursday to prep for the games at the weekend. So, yeah, it's pretty intense. But I think as of next week, we're in on Mondays because the COVID testing, it didn't come back in time for our contact session on Tuesday. So now we're in camp. If we're not London-based, we're in camp Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So, yeah, it's pretty intense, but it's good. Like, we're in a good space. Like, there, we've got a new S&C come in. Obviously, love Luke Woodhouse to bits. Like, he's gone off to Wasp, but new SSC's come in and he's just making us run. Like, we're playing really high intensity for a lot of stuff. They want us to play really fast rugby, which I love, so it's been good fun. And to be honest, the best thing about it is just seeing the girls again, being back with them, even though it's very strange. No hugs or anything like that, so it's just a nightmare.
Because I was going to say, what is England camp normally like, Mo? But I guess right now it is completely not normal. But what is it when everything's back to normal? What is it like to be part of that England camp? Because the camaraderie between you girls just seems to be really good when you see, you know, videos on England Rugby Twitter or whenever Sky Sports are down there filming stuff.
Yeah, we always put that on for the cameras. It's not... No, I'm joking. Yeah, so normally you have a roomie. So most people are paired off with a roomie. So my roomie's Marley Packer. So I'm missing her. I have to go into our, everyone's got their own rooms at the minute. You're not allowed to share, even though we're being COVID tested and everything's coming back negative. Like, they still just don't want to take any kind of risk. So that's one thing. Like, you kind of have your food time separate. So the backs always eat together at the minute, the forwards always eat together. So we don't really cross paths that much. When we have huddles, it's all 2 meters apart, and Scott Beeman, our coach, sometimes makes us go 3 meters apart because the GPS is picking up like how close we are to each other. No huddles, no high fives, no hugs, no celebrations. Like, it's just very, very strange times. Like, we can't sit and play cards, which is what we normally do. It's just very weird, very weird. You're only allowed to eat with one other person. So instead of being on a table where you probably have like a bit of a chat with everyone, you're only allowed to sit on a table with one other person, so you kind of just have that conversation. So it's like we're seeing each other, but we're not really seeing each other because you just don't really have that communication or that contact, which is a bit of a shame, to be honest. But it's good that we're back in there, so hopefully that'll change when we lead into Italy, because obviously we'll be in the bubble for the whole week, so we'll see.
And just finally, Mel, before we go on to your Mars 15, in terms of looking ahead to the Six Nations, obviously you mentioned Italy there, but when we had a chat, it was all about all focus from mids and the team and all the players was kind of looking ahead to New Zealand next year. And I guess, have you had maybe time during lockdown or now rugby has now returned, any thoughts about New Zealand and going there next year? Is that sort of the main goal for you now between now and next summer?
I mean, it has to be, doesn't it? But at the minute, like, is it even going to happen? Like, we're still doing Zoom chats, we're still not even allowed to be in a huddle with each other. So I think for us, it's just about getting back out on the pitch and enjoying it in the meantime. And hopefully we'll just, it's the cliche, you take every game as it comes. We normally say that and we don't mean it, but like genuinely at the minute, we mean it. Like, it's just every time we get to go and play the game. You saw Wasps against Bristol got cancelled last weekend. So you just never know what's around the corner. Like, one girl could have coronavirus, be positive, and then that knocks out the whole squad for the weekend, and that's 2 weeks down. So honestly, you just don't know at the minute. So I'd love to say yes, but it's honestly no right now.
Yeah, totally, totally understandable, Mo. And as much as Eden Park is a big stage to play rugby at, taking on a Mars 15 is probably bigger. For this, Mark normally introduces it perfectly. So Mark, over to you, as always, to lead the Mars 15 for Mo.
I'm delighted that Mo has said, we take each day, each game as it comes, but we don't mean it, because reality is we don't mean it. We don't mean it at all. Right, you're in really good company. I think there's Amber Reid and Dane Coles and you, World Cup winners. So I'm expecting a team of utter stardom. The basic premise is this, that the Martians are unaware that the planet's got COVID. They're unaware that we've got a Conservative government and we've got Boris Johnson, and they like the idea of our planet. So they've come along and they've challenged us to a game of rugby to decide the future of civilization. So the stakes are quite high. We've made the toss. We've done rock, paper, scissors. We've lost the toss. So on Saturday, our shuttle leaves. Takes 4 weeks to get to Mars. The game will be played in a rarefied atmosphere. We don't know how big or small or tenacious they'll be. So for you, it's a case of picking your, irrespective of gender, irrespective of size or shape, your best Mars 15.
Lovely. Okay, so one Mac of Vanapola.
Fair play. No explanation needed. Yeah.
Okay, number two, favourite ever player, Short Brits.
Yes.
Nice. Just love, like, hands. Number three, Laura Keats.
Yeah.
So she was one of the first, like, for me, like, new age props, like, one of the props that had, like, the best hands, like, throws a better nine pass than I do, like, just unreal work rate. And she's had a bit of time out, come back and looks better than ever. So she's up there for me. Four, Alwyn Jones. Just think work rate, unreal. Five, the hottest second row at the minute, Zoe Allcroft. And I'm not just saying that because she's Gloucester, she's actually insane.
I was going to say, Mo, that she won an award last night, didn't she, Zoe?
Yeah, she did, yeah. Player of the Year. So, best award to win as well, because it's voted for by her. So, yeah, super proud of her. She's a great gal. Six, Doucetois.
Oh, nice, nice choice.
Just think, like, ridiculous work rate, puts in a shot, just a great player. Number seven, Richie McCaw. Don't think you could have a team without him, could you?
Yeah.
Eight, Parise.
That's a great back row.
Yeah, I thought so. And I thought Parise just balances them a little bit, you know? So that was my explanation with him. Kieran Reid, very close to being in there, but I thought didn't want to have it too heavily stacked in terms of the All Blacks. Number nine, Van der Veerhuizen.
Yes.
Yeah. Just a bit of a legend of his time. 10, Dan Carter. 11, Colby.
Yeah, great shout.
Just ridiculous feet at the minute. 12, I struggled with a bit. So I was either Dumi Gopeth or Kelly Brazier. So I think
both great shouts.
Yeah, Brazier's just like probably one of the best players I've ever played against. Like, her, but like, I don't even know what it's called, but like the amount of things that she's won and everything like that, like, she has won so many World Cups, like, she's just ridiculous and a huge part in everything that they do. And then just, I love how Jimmy Goffer plays, like, the little kick pass, I think, kind of summed him up the other day. I can't remember who they were playing against, but literally just dinked it through and they caught it.
And there's a guy who's, if I'm not wrong, is he 38?
Yeah. Is he?
And he's been playing at the very top of his game for probably forever, but 15 years at the very top. And he doesn't look 2 years older than some of the 22-year-olds.
No. And he's just still got so much about him, like so much energy, like pulls the strings. Yeah, I think, like, I really struggled with that one. Because he's 38, we'll go Gopper. 13, Brian O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Just classic. 14, Lydia Thompson. I think she's one of the best finishers I've ever seen, like the most ridiculous feat. And I've never seen someone turn Portia Woodman inside out before either. And she's probably the only one that's ever done that. And then 15, Serge Blanco.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Just in terms of like flair and stuff.
I love that. Of that team, Mo, there's a few contenders for captain, but who would be captain?
Do you know what? I'd actually go, oh, that's tough, that is.
Doucetois would be a great call, but I'm not going to lead you into that.
Yeah, he would be. I'm actually going to go with Keats, Laura Keats. So she was my first ever captain for England. She was my under-20 captain. Just always said the right thing, led by example, did the right stuff. And I just think she's brilliant at that. Very calm, very collected, like, but when she needs to have fire, she has fire. So, yeah.
And then one of the reason I'm going to ask this question first is when I've been looking at YouTube clips of you mostly talking rather than playing, I believe that the next phase of your career, when it comes to that, will be in coaching.
Yeah.
And, whether that's true or not. Just the way in which you present yourself and the way in which you you get it, you understand the game of rugby. And that you can't, I don't think you can communicate that without having it inside you somewhere. So we need a coach, a manager, a water boy and a kit man.
So I actually said me for coach because I'd actually love to coach a team like that. You led me in. That was a great setup. Yeah, and if I couldn't have me, then I'd go Steve Hansen because I'd love to know like what he says, how he manages it, what he does to have that much success. Like there's something going right there. For kit man, I went for the Gloss kit man, Sean Bullock. So he's actually stepped across into our Gloucester Heartbeat team a little bit recently. And it was our first home game at the weekend. We even had Gloucester towels. Like this might seem novel to all the guys that play rugby, like, but for us, it was so special. And we had like towels with the Gloucester badge on, all of our kit was numbered. So we had like our own stuff to warm up in. He had homemade banana bread, homemade orange flapjack for after, different shakes. And like, it's the little things, but it makes such a big difference to us. So for that, he's right up there for me. Just a great guy. And like, it's great to have him kind of involved. Manager, the same as Amber Reid, was Jan Mann. Yeah. So Jeanette Shaw, like, just cannot speak highly enough of her. Anyone that was involved when she was around, I think, just huge kudos to what she did. Like, had our backs more than anything, was just a ridiculous human, like one of the best humans I've come across. So yeah, she'd be there. I'd love to go on tour with her again. And then for water, I had like a few people that I hadn't put in, so like Kieran Reid, Bowden Barrett, Michael Hooper, someone like a Skaz, just gets the game like cool, calm, collected. But I'm actually into the all or nothing Tottenham Hotspur at the minute, so I think I'd have to go Jose Mourinho because I just think he's unbelievable.
No, I have exactly the same feeling as Mo on that. I watched it wanting to hate him because I do hate him. And then over six episodes, I gradually, and then not so gradually, properly warmed to him. Now he's my favourite coach. How fickle am I? But he gets it. He completely gets man management. And I know it's all for the cameras, but he gets it. Mm. And he probably gets another 10 or 15% out. That's a lot. Of the players who are sort of the also-rans. And you get the impression people want to play for him. And when you've conquered that as a coach, you can't go wrong.
I feel like that's the same for me. Like, as soon as you get to the elite level, like, you've kind of got the players that have the tactical ability and they have the technical ability, and it's just about managing them. Like, yeah, you have to sort out a few tactics and stuff, but if you can get the best out of that person, you're going to have a good team. And I feel like that's what he does, and I just absolutely love it. And it's just his energy that he brings. Like, I think he's brilliant.
And he's a tracksuit manager, which I love. Sorry, I'm going to witter on about my own little idiosyncrasies here, but a patron of our foundation is Sean Edwards, and the conversations I have with Sean are often one way, but we had a very one way conversation recently where he was telling me that if you pick an international team, doesn't really matter who you are, and another international team, then the players almost cancel each other out. So the reality is, the coach that can get the best out of those players is the best person on that pitch. And therefore, it's all about the coaches. Completely decrying the talent on show, he said, it's all about coaching. So almost, he said, my job isn't to get one player fit or one player understanding this. It's to get 1% out of him that will be the difference on that day. And I just looked at that and thought, his record speaks for himself in a way, but he's not wrong. And I honestly, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. I can see you being a wonderful coach.
I hope so.
As I was going to say, Mel, I'm glad you selected yourself in the team because I was going to give you two roles. One, probably on comms with Nick Ethan, probably Hugo Monier on Mars.
Yeah, I love working with those two. They're two of my favourites. And Flats. David Flats will be up there. I think he's brilliant.
So it also means now you're going to be in charge of the music as the coach as well, Mel, because I've heard, and I think you were doing the House of Rugby with Alex Payne during lockdown, and he mentioned sort of you were in charge of the music when it comes to England and Gloucester Heartbreak, that's right?
Yeah, it's true. I don't know if the girls like that or not, though, so you'd have to ask them. But I just think it's really important to have music. Like, I love music. I think it can help with any mood. So I think it's really important, like walking into a quiet changing room, or even when we're having food, like just having like a bit of an awkward silence. Like, I just hate it. So I'm like, get some tunes on.
Well, I'm sure you'll be in charge of the tunes in the upcoming internationals, Mo. I know you've got to get off and get to Gloucester Hartbury and then prepare, obviously, for the weekend in England. And we wish you all the best of luck as well on the international stage, Mo. And thank you so much for giving us your time on the Looseheads podcast this afternoon.
Thank you so much, guys. It's lovely to see you all.